We're here at Doc Searles. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So we're at Mashup Camp. What do you think? What's going on? What are you seeing out there?
Well, what I like about it is that it's not vendor sports. It's more like...
real people.
The vendors that are here, the whole purpose of being here is to get along. It's not to kill everybody else, right? That's often what vendors want to do. You know, they want to beat the other guy.
And the conferences kind of reek of that, right? The normal conferences.
Yeah, generally, I don't know so much reek of that. It's just that it's very pro forma to do vendor sports at conferences. You know, every vendor has a kind of, not every vendor, but the vendors that are here, Google and eBay and
Adobe and those guys, yeah.
And these other guys, they have what are called APIs, application program interfaces, that expose some of their services. So theoretically, you can take Google Groups and... or Yahoo Groups and Google Maps and Flickr photos and create an application that takes your Yahoo group and puts together pictures of your friends on a Google Map, right? And that's you know, made possible by
they're these participating. I mean, the way the sponsors are here are the vendors. They're not really hardcore sponsors. They're participating. Yeah.
They're participating.
Just opening it up and saying, "Hey, look at this. Here's what we got."
And there are no speakers in the usual sense. I mean, you know, we're most conferences are based on this notion that comes from school, kind of, you know, in the old lecture halls, that the only smart people are the people in the front of the room and everybody else is an empty vessel. And you pour the wisdom of the speakers in the front of the room into the empty brains of the people in the audience. And that's not what goes on in tech conferences generally. The curb weight of intelligence is generally on the audience's side and not whoever's speaking on stage. And this is much better designed for what goes on in real tech life, which is a lot of good, smart, original, creative people trying to figure out better ways to do whatever they're doing anyway, right? And so you mash it all up. It's kind of like every ingredient gets to help make their own recipe.
Yeah, and now we're using the podcast thing to syndicate the voices. People are blogging it. It's on Memorandum.
Right.
Dan's got his photos up within a nanosecond. It's
really
fantastic. The world's watching.
I don't know if the whole world's watching, but enough of them.
Well, the tech world. I mean, there's people in Europe and Asia.
Oh, that's
participating.
That's true. Yeah.
For those folks out there, what can you tell them is happening from your eyes here and on site?
What's happening is what I'd call productive conversation. A lot of people going one step beyond schmoozing to say, okay, what have you gotten? What have I gotten? How can we work together? Earlier I was talking to a couple guys. One was Tantek Celik with Technorati, who was talking about microformats here. Those are the guys that invented the element inside an HTML tag that allows you to identify something as a tag and allows the search engine to pick it up as a tag. And that perhaps do a similar thing with what we might call threaded blogging. So I was involved in a conversation about threaded blogging, where if somebody starts a subject and other people want to follow along or blog just to that subject and follow that as a thread through a search engine or through some other thing you can mash up together, that can be done.
Yeah.
It's like the threshold of invention is really low here, and it's not based on the assumption that, I'm going to invent something that nobody else has and I'm going to sell that to the world. It's more like, I don't know how I'm going to make money. It might be through services on the back end or something else like that, but I am going to work with other people to invent something new out of stuff that's laying around.
A lot of people are talking about we're in a bubble. I mean, we're just in an early growth market. I mean, that's the kind of interaction people kind of do when they say, hey, we really don't know what the future's going to hold. I need you just as much as you need me.
Right.
I mean, there's a partnership in a way, kind of in an unwritten way. Hey, you know, I'm not going to do the whole thing if I'm a developer, but hey, this guy's got an API that I can leverage. Or I'm interested in that topic. So the schmoozing really is more of a collaborative filter, if you will.
Yeah, it's that. I mean, at any conference like this, there's a lot of, hey, man, I haven't seen you in a few months. What have you been doing? Who are you working for now? I haven't read your blog. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's one of the mantras here, because there are too freaking many of them but the rest of it. But anyway, but there is that extra step, every one of these APIs, everybody's technology here is more of a magnet. You know, very often in the vendor sports world, it's sort of like everybody's magnet is the pole that repels everybody else. You know, it's kind of like everybody kind of stay out of my space because I'm the only one doing this, right? Here it's like I can't be the only one doing this because I'm only useful if I'm doing this stuff with somebody else.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's I feel like that's a transition point now with tech. And for a long time, and I've been around it for way too many years, maybe 30 years now.
I think the entrepreneur, I mean, I'm an entrepreneur, and I look at the marketplace, and, you know, you podcast with Steve, great podcast. I mean, I could look at that as a competitive podcast. I don't. I love you guys.
But it's not. I mean,
It's plenty of beachhead.
Well, like, I mean, for example, before I go home, I live in Santa Barbara, which is about 350 miles away from here. I've rented a Ford Fusion car or a Ford Focus. They both have a CD slot and a dashboard, and above the CD slot it says MP3. And what I'll do is I'll burn a whole pile of podcasts onto a CD, and I'll listen to them on the way back. You know, and I'll have you, and I'll have Steve, and I'll have a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
You know, so is this competition?
No.
Any more than one name in a phone book, you know?
Well, we're in an all-growing ecosystem, and, you know, as I always say, the beachhead that everyone's forging upon in this new environment is experimentation, is innovation. There's plenty of room. Sports model is, okay, no, I need to protect it. I want to own it.
You know what it is? There's a shift in metaphors. The web is kind of founded on two different metaphors. The first one, actually the second one, was really publishing. You know, you authored pages that you put up and you wrote and later that you syndicated. And there were all these publishing metaphors that went along with it. And we understood the web as a publisher. It had hypertext, for example. You know, Tim Berners-Lee saw it as a web of documents. In the meantime, when it got commercialized, we got the whole notion of sites with addresses, with locations, and that you had architects and builders and
navigation,
so forth.
Navigation.
And all this, and traffic.
Yeah.
And
banner ads.
And that's what I'd call a static web. And the former is really the live web. And the live web is coming into its own now.
Yeah.
You know, it's live. I mean, when you post this blog, and if you post this podcast, and you publicize it in a blog, an RSS feed goes out. Technorati knows about that in a minute, or 5 minutes, or something like that. I can see it on Technorati and PubSub and Ice Rocket and Google Blog Search and Feedster within a few hours. There's dialogue is possible here. You know, if you're interested in a subject, you know, maybe it's mashups, right? You can subscribe to searches that are in your aggregator almost immediately as they're published. So you can follow this stuff almost in real time.
Yeah, totally.
This is a remarkable change, and it's not something you do alone, right? This is, as you said, it's part of an ecosystem. So this is something I'm taking a special interest in right now, the whole live side of what the web is doing.
And if you look at the successful things, like if you look at the successful sites, obviously you've been a big part of this community, obviously with your book and obviously being involved. And you look at PodTech in particular, popularity of PodTech, TechCrunch, Scoble, Steve Gilmore, Dan Farber, everyone's working on the same thing. We're all together in this. You know, so
yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Very much growth is about openness, and the ones who aren't successful, the ones who are me. And
no, I mean we're learning how to everybody to, you know, add value to everybody else and create new value together, and that's a different, you know what it is? It's an ecology of relationship. You know, it's kind of moved from conversation to relationship. Some of the relationships are evanescent and transient, and others are more enduring. But it's very much a social thing. I mean, but not in a trivial sense, but in a really constructive sense. There are certain things we can only do together.
There's a certain truth serum out there right now. Steve Gilmore, your bud, wrote that post about the bullshit meter, bullshit technology.
Yeah, right.
It was great.
Yeah,
post.
Yeah. He told me about it. I haven't seen it yet.
It's a great.
He saw somebody go by and he says, "You can't read that guy's shit because I sprayed my bullshit spray on it and it went away."
The bullshit spray. Yeah. But that's what we're at. I mean, it used to be companies and people could hide behind some bullshit and then no one really knows about yesterday's news.
Well, that was I mean, where's
not
marketing?
Anymore.
I would bet there's not any marketing. Marketing people here. There's no point to it. It's self-marketing. Everybody, you know, is making stuff here.
The product, the people, the info is the marketing. Like the sponsors. We just put it out there. Let the good stuff be judged on its own merits.
Right.
There's no marketing from the machine anymore, you know, that corporate philosophy.
An interesting thing, my wife pointed this out years ago when I was working in marketing and she'd been in retailing and merchandising and was very big in the fashion business for a long time. And we were talking about marketing and why is it that in most companies, big companies, if there's a sales and marketing VP, they came from sales, not marketing. Why is that? And she said, it's very simple. Sales is real and marketing is bullshit. And she also said, well, sales touches the customer. And politically, marketing is not allowed to touch the customer. That's sales job. Marketing is being obsoleted. I mean, that's one of the things we were saying in Clutrain 7 years ago.
Yeah.
It's becoming obvious now that marketing either becomes something like sales in the sense that it touches the customer. It changes its nature. It used to be, if you were doing marketing, you had to craft a message that you lobbed at this distant marketplace out there. Nobody's doing messages anymore.
Yeah, no, I'll give you a great example. I was doing a podcast with a corporation just because this guy was knowledgeable on a topic at Juniper Networks. And he was just a pro.
Yeah.
He wasn't part of marketing. He was like a little bit above a product manager.
Yeah.
And he knew his stuff. And he said this is the most amazing stuff on the podcast, talking about security and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I posted it. It was really good information. That was a marketing home run for them. Because
the
response from that guy.
And I guarantee you, the marketing department never even would have thought of it.
And the marketing department was like, oh my God, what is this? The information's the ad. And they realized that, oh my God, the people want to hear from the guy who knows the most about the topic that they're interested in.
Right.
Not some over-circulated, over-amplified corporate message.
Right, right.
Those days are gone.
And even the notion of, assembling a focus group, who needs these anymore in many cases?
They're live, like you said, the live focus group.
It's a live thing. Peter Hirschberg, who's supposed to speak here this afternoon, I hope he gets here, was telling me this story a while back. He was involved in the fashion business and that kind of thing for a while. And he was telling the story of this person he knew that worked for Victoria's Secret. And last spring, Victoria's Secret came out with this new bra called IPEX, I-P-E-X.
I got to cover that sector now.
Yeah, that's your...
Since you mentioned it.
You're assigned to that. You do it in stereo, as a matter of fact. Just two lavalier mics, put them on there. Yeah, it's a good
idea. I'm in Tokyo.
Yeah, I need to adjust the microphones, honey. Don't move. Both of you. I'm not going to wear one.
Where's the XLR cable?
We need you in stereo over there. Let me attach these. No, they have to go out here. Yeah. Anyway.
So, we digress.
Hold still. Anyway, so he was saying that this person who used to work for him, who worked for Victoria's Secret, would say, well, we came out with this bra, and it's been several weeks, and it's been out going through the merchandising mill, and what are we going to do? We need to convene some focus groups to see how it's doing. And Peter said, well, why don't we just look on Technorati here, which he works for, and see what they're saying. And there were hundreds of women talking to each other about this bra, mostly in very positive terms. And this person who worked for the company kind of flipped out, like, oh, my God, look what's going on. They had no idea that this stuff was actually happening. It was a window on the customer that you'd never get from a focus group. It's unfacilitated, unfiltered, and the real deal. And that's you can't buy that.
Yeah, I mean, when I went to business school in the 90s, early 90s, in the marketing class, they said, oh, one of the focus groups is they get everyone in a room and have hidden cameras. That's really a realistic environment.
Oh, sure. We live in those places all the time. Yeah. At home, I always watch out for the missing hidden cameras.
Who knows? My wife's probably got cameras on me every day now.
Oh, yeah.
She's out of town.
Yeah, no one-way glass between rooms. Yeah, the guys are eating pizza and beer on the other side.
Doc, you've been a great great guy. Everyone loves you. You had a great book.
What was the Blue Train Manifesto, in case you forgot to say.
No, I know the book. Everyone knows the title.
It's 7 years old now. I mean, you can get it almost free on Amazon.
Yeah, but I mean, everyone who follows your blog knows who you are. But for the folks out there who aren't here and folks who don't
most
know you,
aren't.
Haven't met you at the conferences, what advice would you tell them about going forward in this new live web? There's a lot of developers are going to listen to this podcast, a lot of business people. We're moving to this new paradigm. What's your...
My mundane and standard advice is start a blog if you don't have one already. Write about the things you're interested in. Experiment with it. Have fun with it. Don't think of a blog as a chore. Think of it as one-way email to the world. In other words, everybody says, I can't find time to blog because it looks like work. It's like building a site. I need a designer and all that crap. The advantage of the live web is it's like talking. And if you're already emailing, some of your email can go to the world. Some of the email can be essentially CC world. That's what a blog is.
Let's talk about this boring thing, because I have four kids under 10.
Boring?
So let's talk about your comment about people think blogging is boring.
Or a chore.
I have four kids under 10. My life's pretty hectic, doing a lot of podcasting.
Yeah.
But I found that blogging is boring by itself. It is a one-way email, but very quickly...
Well,
you have an instant group that comes in.
Yeah.
There are people who actually do care about many things.
Oh, absolutely.
And there's people out there who do care about what you write about.
And there are people who are expert on many things. Another interesting thing about blogging, and this is part of the live aspect of the web, is that most blogging is provisional. That is to say, like, who can say anything final about Mashup Camp, right? I mean, so much isn't... I mean, when I write, I write for a magazine, right? So when I write editorials for the magazine, it's very carefully thought out stuff. It's going to run 3 months from now. I'm putting on my papal hat. I'm standing behind the pulpit, and I'm adopting this homiletic tone that says, I am the authority, and this is my pronouncement about this subject. And it's like using the language of the French court, you know. it's weird. And whereas when I'm blogging, I'm just being real, and I'm saying, you know, I think this is true. It may not be, and I wonder what the rest of you all think.
Yeah.
And that's...
It's not a matter of fact.
It's not a matter of fact. It's a matter of informed conjecture. And often will people correct each other.
Yeah. There's some self-governance involved.
I wouldn't call it governance, but it's
self-management.
It's just the way society works. I mean, society will... If somebody's full of gas and doesn't make sense, you know, people know it, and sometimes they say it. Other times, if somebody's really smart and makes a lot of sense, or they're funny, people pass that along. But I often, the stuff that interests me most about blogging is what I call rolling snowballs, which is, you know, rather than pushing rocks up a hill, which is what a lot of traditional journalism is, you know, I have a cause and I'm going to try and push this cause up the hill. It's more like rolling snowballs downhill. I have this idea. This idea is, let's say, like David Berlin. I have this idea. Mashup
Camp. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to roll that and see where it goes, right? And what happens is it rolls fast and it accretes other posts and the interest of other people. It's not even his idea anymore. It's a bunch of people's ideas. It's rolling.
It happens with velocity, the event turnaround. The snowball gets going quickly once it gets going.
And if it doesn't go, you know, pretty soon.
Yeah, and
you're not
just
wasting
say,
your time.
Okay, nope.
Yeah.
It's like giving a performance and no one claps. Okay, I guess they didn't like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things I've written where
I can't take it personal.
No, there's some things I've written where I think it's the freaking coolest thing I've ever written and nothing happens, right? And then I'll write something else about dentistry or something, you know, and... Oh, huge, huge response. And who knows? I mean, you can only find out by trying.
Yeah, yeah.
But the mechanism of finding out is much quicker and more...
I've had that with my podcast, one podcast. I'm like, that was one of the best interviews I've ever done.
Yeah.
I've got, you know, what was my... You know, that was your worst interview. And then I've had interviews, that was all right. That was a huge success. Oh, my God, I had no idea people care about this guy.
Yeah, but I mean, another interesting thing. I mean, I've been... You know, among my avocations is photography. I started out as a newspaper photographer 35 years ago, something like that. And now I take photos and I stick them up on Flickr by the thousands, right? And in front of our house is this pool that has an infinity edge, like a horizon edge. It's a waterfall on the far side. It's really great for shooting sunsets, and it overlooks the Pacific in Santa Barbara. And I've experimented shooting this pool a zillion different ways. And it's a really interesting control experiment in what other people think is good photography. Almost without exception, the shots that I think are the best shots are not the shots that people respond to. There are other shots that people like better. And I don't even know what to do with that other than just throw everything up there and see what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and in the past, I would have self-edited. A lot of those shots would have gone in the drawer and would have been thrown away. No, I'm not so sure. You know, I'm finding out things about photography and my own photography I never knew before because there's this feedback mechanism that was never there.
Throw it up there, see what happens. Mashup Camp, we hear it. Doc Searle's Clue Train Manifesto, famous book, 7 years ago. Thanks for the podcast.
Thank you. Appreciate it.